طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This morning we take a long look at the Israeli civilian and military legal courts through the eyes of one who works in those systems every day. It is rare to find an Israeli Jewish attorney who spends his life defending Palestinians and other opponents of the occupation in both Israel and the West Bank of Palestine. But we have one with us this morning. Neri Ramadi gave up filmmaking and went to law school because he wanted to find a useful way to oppose the occupation and seek justice for Palestinians. He now is a partner in the Israeli law firm of Gabby Lasky and Partners, a human rights office specializing in freedom of expression and protest. We sat down with Neri to discuss his work. Thank you, Neri, for sitting down with us on This Week in Palestine to talk about your work in Israel-Palestine. You are what may be best described as an Israeli human rights attorney who represents a wide variety of clients who are suffering the effects of the occupation in both Israel and the occupied West Bank of Palestine. Talk to us about your work, your clients, the legal system within which you operate, and how that legal system works for both Jews and Arabs in a culture of occupation.
Well, actually, all legal systems are complicated, but I think the situation in the West Bank is even more complicated than usual. And I think I should give a bit of a background to understand how the legal system in the West Bank was formed.
Good.
After 67, Israel had to decide how is it going to treat legally the areas that it occupied. And the decision that was made actually before the war, because they all knew what's going to happen, was that they're going to treat all the territories that they captured as occupied territories in the legal term. And it's really important to understand that occupied territories is a legal term. Above the moral issues and above that, it's a legal term that is part of international law.
Right.
So, in general, international law has tried to find a solution to a situation when, during war, countries are occupying each other's territories, and how you can protect as much as you can the civilian population during that war when the territory is held by a different country. So the idea, the general concept of international law is that you try to keep the land as much as it was when you took it. You don't make changes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You don't pillage it. You don't drive people out of their homes, and you try to keep all the systems that were there active, because all the system has collapsed because you took the land. So you are in charge as an occupier on education, on health, on security, and on justice. So this is your duties as an occupier. Now, that was only one solution that could have been chosen by Israel. Israel chose other solution to other territories that she occupied. She annexed the Golan Heights and annexed Jerusalem. She returned Sinai to Egypt. She withdrawn from Gaza in kind of a way. But the West Bank was in 67 and is today legally occupied by Israel.
Right, but under international law, it's illegal for you to move your population into the occupied.
I will get to there. Okay. It's more complicated. It's even more complicated than that. It starts. Okay, so about the laws that are the laws of the land in the occupied land is first the laws that were being there before. Mm-hmm. So the laws that were in the West Bank prior to Israel occupying it were Jordanian laws with British mandate laws, with Ottoman laws. Those are all the occupiers of the land during the recent years. Right. Okay. So this was the legal system when the country was occupied. But the international law appoints the military commander of the area to be the sovereign of the area. So actually the sovereign of the West Bank is a military commander. He changes every few years, but there is a military commander in the Israeli army who is the sovereign of the West Bank. He is the legislator. He is in charge of everything else that's happening civilly or in security in that area. And here, as I said, he's a legislator, so he immediately starts legislating. And until today, there are more than 2,000 different laws that the military commander has legislated. So this is another legal system that arrived to that area. It lives with the Georgian laws and the British mandate and the Ottoman laws all together. And through the years, there were a few other developments that also happened. First, there was the settler movement. Mm-hmm. So settlers have started to enter the West Bank and try to live there. There was a whole idea about how legally can they enter the West Bank and live there. In the beginning, the Supreme Court tried to stop it, the Israeli Supreme Court, but then they found this kind of formation that when it's land that belonged to the empire, okay, when the land is what's called state land and not belong to anyone private, then the state, which is in this case the military commander, can make use of it. And one of the uses they thought they could do is building settlements. It's a legal maneuver, okay? But apart from the fact that there is a big question about its legality, it created a new reality in that area. And the reality was that more and more Israelis were living in the same place as Palestinians, and they were supposed to be also governed by the same sovereign, the military commander. Because the military commander is the sovereign of the area, is not the sovereign of the Palestinians. But of course, that felt very uncomfortable to the Israelis that were living in the West Bank, for the settlers. So they tried to find a legal solution for it. And the legal solution they found was Israelis are carrying with themselves what they call the backpack of rights of Israelis. So Israelis in that area are subjected to Israeli law. They are not subjected to all the laws that are actually the laws of that place.
Or international law.
International law, again, I have a very clear opinion about that. But I think it's a lost cause, this fight about the legality of the settlements. They are there. There are too many people to now saying we will take them out because it's illegal. This the solution is have to be political now. It's not about...
No,
I agree, of course.
But you said that if the land was not sort of privately owned, if you didn't have deeds, etc., it was sort of okay to occupy it.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying the international law is saying that if the land it doesn't belong to private, then the occupier can use the land for his needs. Okay, this is again all the discussion about international law and occupation law. I think is not relevant to the situation as we are talking now, because occupation and this kind of use of the land is means to during the war you can build an army camp there. Until the war is finished, then you finished with the occupation. Okay? The problem is that all this legal system of occupation law doesn't fit to 49 years of occupation. It's supposed to be a short-term tool to allow things to manage until it's finished. Okay? When the U.S. was in Iraq, it had its own military occupation in certain areas of Iraq. They had a military commander, they had military courts, and and when it's finished, because it was for the war, to the war, during the war. Okay? So I'm saying that trying to analyze the Israeli occupation now in tools of international law of occupation is not really relevant, because it doesn't fit anymore to this kind of description. And I will get to that.
Okay.
So what happened is that now in that region, there was another legal system in that region, the Israeli legal system, but it was only applying for Israelis. And then came the Oslo Accords. And the Oslo Accords divided the West Bank to those three areas, A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And in area A, the seven major cities of Palestine, the Palestinians formed their own legal system with their own laws and their own courts, but they were only rich and practice on A area. Right. So there was another legal system appearing in that region, which is very, very small and doesn't have a lot of population. And there, in order to understand the legal system in the West Bank, you need to know about five different legal systems. This is what just, the legal tools that you have when you start working in that area. And what happened also is that the settlement movement was getting and is getting bigger and bigger. And it's more and more on and in within the Palestinian population. As in the beginning, there were few settlements in few places and on the verges of the territories. It became bigger and bigger and inside and more. So now there is almost daily conflict between Palestinian settlers on same places.
Yeah.
And they are subject to different laws. So what is happening is like when there is a conflict between Palestinian and Israeli, which is really something that happened because it's the same land, it's the same roads, you can see the two different legal systems start to operate. And one of them is the Israeli legal system, which is for Israelis, and it's kind of progressive, kind of a legal system that we know in Western countries, kind of, thinking about rights also of the accusers of people who are suspect of minors. And the other legal system, which is the military plus all legal systems of the West Bank, which is totally different. And I think that when they are met, this is where you can see how problematic is that legal system for Palestinians. And I will elaborate a little bit about that now, because You know, when there are many places in the world where there are bad legal systems, and there are very bad countries around the world, which has, yeah. But it's for everyone bad. It's bad for everyone. Right. Yeah,
and it doesn't discriminate.
Yeah, there is something comforting about being North Korean when you know all your neighbors are also.
Yeah.
You know, and when you reflect those, you know, a very progressive legal system in front of a very bad legal system in the same place, in the same area, doing the same violation, then it's very bad. And then it shows how bad the other legal system is. And the other system is very bad because it contradicts the idea of legal system. Because the idea of legal system is that we will accept the idea that we are judged and that there is cops and that they're taking us to prison as a society because we want the legal system to keep our society safe, or let's say in order, or free. This is why we accept that, you know, because we could, you know, also in Western countries, we could say, no, I don't want, but we accept the idea that there is police and there is judges, and then because we know that the general idea is to keep us is to keep our interest. Yes, so the concept of the military law and the military court is different than the legal system we know, because the interest that the military law and the military court is guarding is the interest of Israel and of Israelis,
right,
and not of its clients. It's like a court that the interest of it, it's not the interest of its clients, which is a unique and bring the anomaly of the court to a very clear place. Because I'll give you an example. Around 30% of the cases that comes to the military courts are cases of Palestinians that illegally enter Israel in order to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now think of the logic of it. It's twisted logic. It's not the interest of the region of Palestine, of the occupied territory, that Palestinians will not go out to Israel. It's the interest of Israel that people will not enter to its borders illegally. So it's Israel who should judge them. Not, it's like if you go illegally to Canada, okay?
Yeah.
It's Canada that will catch you and deport you. It's not the U.S. that will
right.
sue you or that you illegally entered Canada. Okay, so this is the interest that they are protecting is the interest of Israel. Actually, if they were protecting the interest of the Palestinians, as a court should do, protect the interest of its people, then the interest of Palestinians is to go to Israel and work because it's bring money to the West Bank and they can, you know, they develop and do a lot of things with it. But because it's that way around, then, yeah, and it, you know, and the examples are endless. Let's say we have a lot of miners who throw stones in Palestine,
right.
Okay, and some of them are very little age. Now, in Israel, when a judge think about should I remand a child that threw stones, he think about the rehabilitation of the child, that he could be back to society and be a productive member of society. So this is the interest in a civil court, in the,
right.
Yeah, but in the military court, because the Palestinian child is not an interest of the military court. The interest of the military court is that the stones will not be thrown, so he will go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that now, a lot of the people that work in that system, like prosecutors and judges, they are not monsters. They are not mean people. In there, some of them are nice. Some of them are not nice. Some of them, but it's inherited in that system itself that the system is aiming only to protect Israeli interest. And, you know, and on the other way, it's not to protect Palestinian interest, which means the system is not really care about violence between Palestinians, let's say. Although it's their legal system. Like, if two Palestinians are hitting each other, they will not find themselves in that court. They will actually, if it's an area B or C, they will actually have no court to go to.
So the courts are not to help protect Palestinians from other Palestinians. It's simply in terms of confrontations with Israelis and Palestinians.
The courts are not to protect Palestinians, period. It's also not to protect Palestinians from settlers, Palestinians from army.
Right.
It's only to protect Israeli interest, which means settlers or Israel or army, against Palestinians.
Right.
And this is the legal system that we are dealing with. Now, this is on, let's say, theoretical level, more like, or when you look from above, but when you go to the ground, you can see the manifestation of it very clearly, you know, visually, when you go to the military courts. How does the military courts look? The military courts are actually run by the Israeli jail services. They are the ones that run physically the entrance and the... So in order to, like, if you are just a passerby, you know, you want to go and listen to a trial, you cannot just enter. You know, you need to coordinate, and they need to check you, and they need to... Yeah. And I recommend everyone who goes to Palestine to come and visit the military courts, because it's a very important and educative experience.
But you have to have permission to go into the court?
Yeah, you have to have permission, but it's you can obtain that permission.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then you go, you enter, and you see immediately that division. Because Palestinians, the Palestinian families, are kept in this court that is caged. And they are not allowed to go freely in the court, go through the halls or go through the secretaries or do all those things. They are caged and they are called separately when they're... the court of their family member is happening there. They take them, they put them inside the court, they let them sit there for 5 minutes to see the hearing, and then they go out. So, on the other hand, when Israelis are coming to that court, when I come to that court, I'm free to move all over the place, I can go there, I can go there. When Israeli witnesses are coming, they are never, you know, in that cage. They are, you know, roaming all over the place. So there's like this place for Palestinians and the place for the Israelis. Inside the court itself, the judge is a military judge. He wears uniform. The prosecutor is a military prosecutor. He wears uniform. Even visually, how can you imagine that you can get, as a Palestinian, how can you imagine you can get justice when they are both army officers are standing in one side and you are on the outside with your public, with your defense lawyer, who is most of the time Palestinian, and there is no, you know, there's no common language to, there's no even appearance of two equal sides in front of a judge.
Yeah.
This is visual, and the whole thing runs in Hebrew. The judges and the defense lawyers and the prosecutors, they all speak Hebrew. It's amazing to me. This is something I would never understand. That there, the judges there, that this is their job, to be judges inside and to judge only Palestinians, that they don't speak Arabic.
In the West Bank.
In the West Bank.
Yeah.
This is their job. They don't have other job. It's not like a reserve call or something. They are judges, military judges in the West Bank to judge Palestinians, and they don't speak Arabic. This is the language of your clients. Yeah. This is the people. How would you understand?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are translators. The translators are soldiers, young soldiers of Druze, young soldiers, who doesn't really speak good Arabic or Hebrew. Yeah. because they are young people, and legal issues are difficult to understand even when you are not young, if you are not a lawyer. So the quality of the translation is very bad. And, you know, as a defense lawyer, I find myself a lot of time, all the time listening also to the translation and also to what my clients are saying in Arabic or the other witnesses are saying in Arabic, and fixing the translation. You know, because it's very important that, you know, the wording will be accurate, because it could be, you know, a life or death.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, like, there is this word in Arabic about peace demonstrations. And they translated all the time, peaceful demonstration. And the translator don't know this word, so they always translate it as demonstrations against peace.
Oh my God.
So every time a client said, we were participating in a very peaceful demonstration, and the translator is saying, we were participating in a demonstration against peace. And you know, you have to be all the time on the edge to listen, to understand this also. And because of this disconnect, there is also disconnect with the families, you know. So what is actually happening is that there is this families and the client, and they speak during the, because most of them cannot meet each other in any other circumstances, because most of the Palestinians are incarcerated inside Israel, and Palestinians cannot visit
them.
So this is their visit, actually, their time in court. So they talk, they don't know what's happening in court. I defend, they are the prosecutor argue, I argue, the judge did listen, and the client has no idea what's happening. I only in the end I come and I try to explain as much as I can of what happened during what happened today. Yeah. It is even more than other legal systems a system of plea bargains. I know a lot of legal systems are systems of plea bargains. This is not unique.
No, not at all.
But I think 99.7% of convictions is a bit more than usual, even in legal systems that are based on plea bargains.
So you're saying that 99.7% of the cases are bargained?
Are finishing in convictions. It is that high because almost all of this number are in plea bargain. Yeah. They run not a lot of evidence trial in there. This is what we are trying to do as a law firm, because we think it's important not to plea bargain. We think it's important to show the evidence, because when you plea bargain, the judge doesn't see anything. The judge only hears the client say, I admit I did that and that. But he doesn't see the picture of evidence. Mm-hmm. So most of the judges don't see any evidence at all through their day, because they're only approving plea bargains. So the only way to expose them to how evidence is obtained and what is there, it's through hearing cases. Now, it's very difficult to do it, first because there are thousands of cases. There are 12,000 cases a year are in the military courts. So this is a lot to handle with, especially when there is no public defense sponsored by state. So the Palestinians has two organizations that are giving free representation to clients, but they don't have enough lawyers to do it. So they are like every lawyer, and some of them are great lawyers. I work with them shoulder to shoulder, but they have 50, 60 cases a day. What can you do with 50, 60 cases a day? Nothing, only plea bargain.
Right.
Yeah. Now, we were fortunate enough to just have a few cases every time, so we can try and really dig inside and make evidence. And when you present, actually, the cases to judges, they are uncomfortable with the cases, a lot of times.
They probably hate to see you coming, right? I mean,
yeah, they don't.
Oh, here we go. I have to try this case. You
know? Yeah. Well, some of them, you know, want to feel judges. So I'm not sure that it's always like that. But
yeah.
And I'm also very, you know, I'm Israeli Jew and I speak the language. So there is, and I'm using it to promote the defense of my clients as much as I can. Yeah. So they listen to me. And a lot of times they make good decisions because of that. And they first help my clients, and second also help changing a little bit the system. So this is how the courts works in general. Specifically, in the way the laws are and the enforcement is done on the ground, it's even worse. Because I will give you just a very clear example. This is in 2009, Israel has legislated a very progressive law about youth. It's a part of a general wave in the world that we should keep youth out of the legal system as much as we can. We try to, you know, rehabilitate them as much as we can and not go take them through the penal system.
Right.
Now, that created a situation that is very common, that there are two teenagers throwing stones at each other, and Jews and a Palestinian. And I will draw you the different lines, so you'll see how different.
So this is like settlers
and Palestinians.
Palestinians
standing, you know, the lands are very close to each other,
right.
And they throw stones at each other.
Right.
You know, there are so many stones in the West Bank. This is what you do.
Yeah.
This is the common practice.
Right.
The army sometimes arrive to the place. Okay. Now the army cannot arrest the Israeli child, the Israeli minor. Legally, he cannot touch it, but he can arrest the Palestinian. So, in order for the Israeli minor to be arrested, a police must be called. Sometimes they call the police, a lot of time they just tell the Israeli minor, go home. But let's say that the police arrived.
So the police have to be called to arrest the Israeli?
Yeah.
Not the military?
The military cannot arrest
the
Israeli.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, because the Israeli has his Israeli rights. Yeah.
Right.
So now they are both taken to the police. The Palestinian will be taken to the police in an army jeep. He will be his eye will be blindfolded. He will be tied with plastic handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be sitting in a jeep all the way to the police. The Israeli minor will be taken to a police car and taken to the police. They might arrive to the same police station.
And then, but one will be adjudicated in a civil court, the Israeli in a civil court,
and the
Palestinian in a military court.
It's even before.
Okay.
It's even in the way they are investigated. The same policeman might investigate both of them. But for the Israeli minor, he has to call the public defense and notify that he has arrested a minor and wait for the public defense to come and counsel the minor. He must call the parents and tell them they can come and sit in the investigation. He cannot investigate him at night. He cannot investigate him from school. There are a whole bunch of laws that protect the investigation of that minor. Okay? Well, the Palestinian minor has none of those rights. And they are proactive, not active in that. So they are not calling any lawyer. Yeah? They ask the minor sometimes if they are nice. They ask the minors, do you have a lawyer? How many minors do you know that are keeping the phone number of a lawyer with themselves? They don't have to notify the family. The family is not allowed to come and be in the investigation. They can question them in the middle of the night. Now, after the questioning is finished, now the Palestinian child will be arrested for 3 days until he will see a judge. The Israeli minor has to come to see a judge in 12 hours. They will come to the courts, and now they will come to different courts. The Israeli child will go to the Israeli civil courts inside Israel. The Palestinian child will go to the military court. And in those courts, they will also be treated differently. Israeli child has, the law says it should be arrested only as a last measure. Yeah? And there are many other possibilities for releasing bail. There are semi-open dormitories. There are all kinds of things that are not jail. He could have, like, you know, electronic cuff on his leg. There are many other things that can happen. To the Palestinian child, there's no other option. There's jail or bail in money. And because throwing stone is very dangerous, the majority of Palestinian minors who throw stones are ending up in prison. While the majority of Israelis who throw stones, if they arrive to the court system, are released in bail. And of course the punishment will be different, because there was also different way to punish minors. Well, in Israel, very, you know, all kind of work for the public, all kind of, you know, other options and parole. And for the Palestinian child, it's just prison.
Prison.
Yeah.
So the Israeli may get what we call community service.
Yeah.
The Palestinian always gets prison.
Yeah, it won't be, I will not say it won't be a long time, it will be 4 or 6 months. But it's prison.
Yeah.
For a minor. Yeah. And there is no justification for it. You can try to justify Israel occupying the territories in all kind of biblical justifications, and there's no occupation. But you cannot justify treating two people doing the same thing in different way. This is not just, and security cannot also justify it, because it's the same felony. If this one is dangerous, then this one is dangerous. And so I think this is an issue that should be pointed very directly, and like this is where the line crosses very clearly. This is a very clear question you can ask every delegate that you ever meet in Israel or in the U.S. How come there's two different legal systems for two people doing the same thing in the same place? Yeah, this cannot be explained.
Right.
Yeah, so I think this is where it starts and where it ends. This is where I go back and I say, this is why it's no longer what we called occupation by international law. Occupation by international law is that the army is controlling a land of a different nation until something will happen. But now it's just very big Israel, very big Israel, with Israelis all over, and another population that has no rights. This is no longer occupation, because the presence of so many Israelis in that territory has dissolved the legal concept of occupation. Okay, it's just a land that was taken by Israel, and it's de facto annexed to its people, but not annexed to the people that are there.
That's right.
Yeah. So this is in general what I talk about when I talk about the legal system in Palestine.
Now, how did you get into this? What is a nice Jewish boy like you doing?
It's funny, and it's also a naive story a bit. Yeah. I was in the film industry in Israel. And I was making, I was writing, producing, all kind of stuff in Israel. And I started to become more interested politically. You can be very not politically, live in Tel Aviv and not know anything about anything. Mm-hmm. Tel Aviv is very comfortable in that way. Yeah. And but I was starting to ask questions, and there was I heard about this demonstration. There was this village; it was under blockade. They wanted to bring food for the village, and I said I will join and wanted to see what happened. It was semi a newspaper like looking at things, not very clean politically. Okay, and I went to this demonstration. And actually, somehow this demonstration touched more people than usually, and the turnout was quite big for Israel. And the army was surprised by the turnout, and quite afraid, I think. So they just, and they were like old ladies singing, "Oh, we are saying, give peace a chance." Mm. And it was this kind of demonstration. And the army just couldn't handle it, and they just ran into it, the police border soldiers, and start beating everyone. Shit. Mm. Like old ladies got their arm broken, and people were running and screaming, right. and I was like, "Oh my God, now it will be all over the news. That will show them. Now they will know what happened in the West Bank." And I opened the radio and I was like waiting to. Then I heard in a violent demonstration of left wing activists, two policemen got injured. And
so that was a story.
That was a story. And I said, so maybe they're not telling me all the truth. It's very naive, I know, but yeah. It has to happen in a way for you to wake up and see. So I said, okay, so if they're not telling me the truth about that, maybe they're not telling me the truth about other things. So I started to look around and learn and talk with people. And of course, when you take the matrix blue pill or red pill, I don't know which one of them it was, you cannot go back. When your eyes are open, your eyes are open. And so I started to think, okay, I need to do something. I need to find my way to help and to try to finish it. And I will start going to demonstration, and I figured out that I'm not very good in getting beaten by police. There are people who are better than me than that. Yeah. I'm not running fast, and they were always catching me. I said, okay, what do you do? I'm a storyteller. Well, lawyers are storytellers in a way. So I said, I will go study law in order to do that. So I went to study law, and I went to Gabi Lasky's law firm. She's a very senior human rights lawyer. And I was apprenticed there, and then I became a partner, and this is what we do.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Do you... I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's an attorney in Bethlehem, and he brings all kinds of cases... loses all kinds of cases. You know, I said, what keeps you going? And he says, not only do people have the right to defense, but this is an act of resistance. What we do is an act of resistance. And so I wondered whether, beyond representing people that need representation, how do you see your work? Do you see your work in larger terms than that, or...
Yeah, of course. Our office is human rights office. We it's not like we are a private firm, but we take only cases that we want to take, okay? Mm-hmm. And those are the cases. It means that we are dead poor, but at least we can.
I was going to say, who pays you?
Not enough.
Yeah.
Not enough people. The clients themselves cannot pay.
Yeah.
I will explain a little bit how did we start representing the Palestinians? Because we are an Israeli firm in Tel Aviv. How did we manage to get there? And we were representing Israelis, actually, that were going to demonstrations in the West Bank with Palestinians. In the villages, Nebi Salah, Bil'in, Yalin, Kadum, all those villages who have like weekly demonstration against the wall or against land confiscation, When they take land.
Confiscation.
Confiscation. Yeah, yeah. It's a hard word. Anyway, so we were representing them, and they were getting us together with Palestinians, and we were like, okay, but we cannot behave this in the same way the system behaves, that we represent only Israelis. Mm. This is exactly the same thing we are against. So we have to represent also the Palestinians that get arrested with them. So we started making those connections, and then we are now friends with all those people, and now it's a community in a way. So we are representing those villages on like a daily basis.
Yeah.
And most of them don't have any money. And what we do, we represent them pro bono and try every time to find finance to cover it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how we do. Sometimes we manage, sometimes we don't. And we just continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've run out of time. There's so many more questions I never got to. But I want to thank you for sitting down this week in Palestine. It's an amazing story. You know, we hear about the difference between the military courts and the civil courts and the way Palestinians are treated and the way Israelis are treated, but to hear it the way you lay it out is very sobering. And so I appreciate your doing it, and very much appreciate the work you're doing.
Thanks.
And wish you very much success. Thank you.
Thank you,
Neri.
That was Israeli human rights attorney Neri Ramadi discussing his work defending Israelis and Palestinians in both the Israeli civil and military courts. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at wzbc.org. Thanks for joining us this morning, and we hope you will tune in again next Sunday when we will feature Israeli new historian Ilan Pappe discussing the forgotten Palestinians. That is next Sunday on This Week in Palestine. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.